This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 29 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, if you like the show, please rate, review, share, or subscribe. Even if you don't like it and you like me, would be nice. But I assume if you're listening at this point, you probably like it. So if you're hearing me stumble and laugh like an idiot right now, but just throw me a rating or review. It really helps. And just share it, you know, if you enjoy the content, the guests and the things that I'm trying to talk about, spread the word and get it to people that you think would enjoy it as well, because that's important. I had a tweet earlier this week, and I said something along the lines of, being addicted to growing this show to the point where, you know, it's at a pretty solid state right now. And obviously, like, this isn't something that's, you know, paying my bills that I'm, you know, clinging to for that reason. But if I can get this point to a point where the platform is big enough that I can give more coaches the opportunity to voice the correct way to do things. There's so much exposure, unfortunately, in the mainstream world to what's wrong with strength training, speed training, sports performance, even the business stuff that we talk about. So, you know, building this platform to a greater level to give myself a voice, bigger voice to voice the right things, and other coaches that I have on as guests and those I interact with on Twitter that are doing some awesome things. I would love to do that. So that's, you guys are an important part of that and sharing it if you like it. So let's get that train moving. I'm going to give a warning right about now. I'm about to rant a little bit. I may be going on my Stephen A. Smith here. I'm going to try to keep it as clean as possible, but I do have the option of tossing an explicit button on these episodes. So if that's something that I have to do, I might do it. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that I'm not a big fan of these Antonio Brown videos. I just want to say, if you're a coach that follows me, if you're a person that listens, an athlete, a parent, a coach, just a person who likes strength training, sports performance, just be patient with me. Keep riding this wave with me towards, I'm going to say this, it's going to sound very extreme and dramatic, but I want to abolish stupidity in the weight room. I think there's too much stupid shit. There's the first curse word explicit on this episode already. Too much stupid shit going on in the weight room. And I'm going to say shit because I think it really drives home the point. Like, it's garbage. It's unnecessary. It's done for, frills or thrills and likes and exposure. And it's just a shame that type of culture has perpetrated, the industry and the life and the, live blood of strength and conditioning. It's really unfortunate. So I want to abolish stupidity. So let's do that. And that brings back to my point, like, spreading this out there. Let's get people on here and let's do some good stuff in terms of getting the right word out there. I mentioned Antonio Brown. Preface this with saying, obviously, all-pro wide receiver, phenomenal athlete. This is nothing against him. I think the only beef I would have with him is to just pick a better trainer. And that's not to say that the guy that's training him is an idiot. He posts some stupid stuff. But I'm sure he's smart too in his own right. And he's a physical therapist, and I'm sure he's good with that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean he should be going into the world of sports performance and strength training and bringing things into that world that don't belong there. So first and foremost, I want to say something. Just let's get these principles off the bat right now. I don't want to hear you listen to this and ask me, well, why are Bosu balls not good? I don't understand. Surfaces do not move in sports, okay? Barring, like, beach fucking volleyball where, like, the sand is sliding all around and all other shit. Like, there's not going to be a time where an earthquake happens, San Andreas Fault is opening up during football games. It's like, what is it, the Batman movie where the, Heinz Field explodes and the whole field rips down the middle and players are falling off and going through into the abyss. The baseball field's not shifting around like you're in freaking Hogwarts and the stairs moving around like magic. Like, the surface does not move, okay? It does not move. It might give a little bit. You might have some turf, that you put your foot into it and has a little bit of give to it, but it's not sliding around like a human game of puzzle, a puzzle board, okay? I'm getting frustrated. I can't even talk right now. All right, so that's number one. Make a note, make a list. Number one, surfaces do not move. Number two, training for, and I'm going to be air quoting my ass off now, and I'm going to just tell you every time I do it, balance, air quote, quote unquote. And I say, I put air quotes around it because no one has any idea what it actually is and they just misuse it. So training for, you know, air quote, balance on a moving surface when we must, again, quote unquote, balance on a non-moving surface during, you know, our sports, whatever we're playing, baseball, football, soccer, hockey, tennis, field hockey, whatever, bowling, I don't know, whatever I haven't mentioned. You know, our main premise is to stabilize against and put force into and accept force from a non-moving surface, the ground, right? Or outside forces from the ball, from, you know, another athlete who we're playing against, with, etc. By training on a moving surface, it's basically building a useless adaptation that does not prepare us for our actual sport. So you're just wasting your time, right? I've used this analogy on Twitter, but it's like putting hydraulics on your Ferrari and bouncing it up and down in your driveway and thinking that it's going to make you, you know, faster in the straightaway when you go racing the quarter mile later. It's doing nothing for you. It's just like, you look like a jerk off. Your neighbors are like, this guy's got this $200,000 car. It's got hydraulics on it. It's bouncing up and down. It makes no sense. Makes no sense. Number three, I am okay with using some sort of balance or stability training for rehabilitation and proprioception coming back from a lower extremity injury. I'm not going to get into specifics of this because ding, 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 not qualified, right? Not going out of my scope here. People that are, you know, in the physical therapy world going out of their scope into strength training, stop doing that. But that's fine. They have their reasons for it, whatever. I work with a lot of smart, qualified physical therapists and they use means of training to work on balance, stability, proprioception, etc. They're using an AirX pad. They're using single leg exercises, safer alternatives that aren't going to have you injured, like doing the, you know, Macarena on a BOSU ball. God forbid you fall off. You're catching these colored sticks, balls. You got footballs, basketballs, baseballs in the training room. Garbage. Throw it out. Number four. Hope you keep your track. Single leg jumps, sprinting, you know, single leg RDL, split squats, lunges, just all different types of things you can add to those in terms of load, speed, intensity, etc. Way better, and these are on a non-moving surface, of course, stable surface. They are the ultimate key for sports success. So we need to see more of those and less of this ridiculous circus act, okay? Number five, I put this in all capitals on my notes here. Stop bringing sports in the weight room. There is literally no such thing as actual sport, quote unquote, specificity, huge air quotes here, in the weight room. Sport itself is the sport itself. The weight room is the weight room for strength training. We build the athletes, make them strong enough, fast enough, explosive enough, and try to turn things to match plane of motion, speed of movement, load, etc., to tailor towards a sport. But we're not actually sport coaches. Stop bringing footballs, hockey sticks, baseball bats, things of that nature into the weight room. They don't belong there. Leave it to the sport coach. I get it. The goggles, the occlusion goggles, they're great. Like, they have a benefit. They've been tested. I have no problem with them. And that was my main point in my tweet. I don't care about using those. They're good. Do it, right? But if they have a benefit, it's going to be with the sport coach on the ice in hockey, on the field in football, on the court in basketball, with the coach. They're going to know how to maximize them for your benefit. Use them with the coach and use the weight room to get stronger and use the physical therapy and your physical therapist to heal and rehabilitate, all right? It's simple, all right? With that said, I'm a man of action. I am officially, declaration, I'm putting my hand in the air right now, officially beginning my war on stupidity and bad training practices. I've had it. I'm up to here currently, you know, putting my hand up to the top of my forehead. I've had enough. At my limit, I'm filled up. I will now, to combat this, because like I said, I'm a man of action. I'm going to take something. I'm going to give you something. And we're going to run with it and hope it grows big enough. I will now be providing one exercise. Excuse me. My throat gets raspy when I get passionate. I will now be providing one exercise every week that can work, air quotes, balance, but is way more effective than balance balls, BOSU balls, you know, balance boards, jumping up and down on trampolines. That was another one. You had a guy with a BOSU ball and a fucking trampoline bouncing up and down with someone kicking it. You're going to get somebody hurt. You look like an asshole. Stop. Stop it. Not necessary. All right? I think, I hope we got that by now. Anyway, I'm going to provide one exercise a week. I'll pick a day. It'll be consistent weekly, week in and week out. It'll be basic stuff. Single leg RDLs, single leg box jumps, lateral jumps, bounds, sprint variations, you name it. I'm going to give it to you. And we're going to run with that for a while and see where that goes and see how the feedback looks on that. And hopefully that gets us somewhere. One last tangent. And it's fitting that I'm recording this right now at my parents' shore house on the Jersey Shore, because the Jersey in me is about to come out. Well, it's been coming out, but it's going to further, you know, come out at this tangent. Who you train, so like the level of athlete, the fame of the athlete, the fame of the person, or how quote-unquote tough your training looks, has no impact or no level of importance in terms of defining the quality of the training or the quality of the coach. Insanely gifted pro athletes often are a terrible benchmark for, you know, measuring the quality of training, due to the fact that they're so gifted, they've done so many more basic things to build them into who they are. Genetically, they're gifted and they have a lot of natural talent, that those gifts and the work that they've done so far is what allows them to do this stupid crap that they're doing. Antonio Brown can bounce on a Bosu ball and catch things, and Alvin Kamara can bounce on a Bosu ball, or not a Bosu ball, actual Swiss ball, even more ridiculous, and catch colored sticks because they're professional athletes, right? You don't need to build those qualities. They have those qualities already, which allow them to do those things they don't even need to do. They could be training with the worst possible trainer, and they might already be, that there is, and it literally does not matter because they're gifted. At that point, it's becoming, can I not screw them up and get them hurt? And ding, 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 that's the main argument with against this training, is you're going to get somebody hurt. It's not necessary. They're going to be good no matter who they go to. So to say that because somebody trains them, they're a good trainer, it makes no sense. You know, there's no correlation. There's no call. Like, is what they're doing making them who they are? No, they're who they are, and then they're doing what they're doing. All right? On top of that, how many likes someone has, how many followers they have. If you have a lot of followers, there are some people with a lot of followers. And as my followers grow, I don't want to say this and it'll come back and bite me in the ass, but it does not define how good of a trainer you are. Oftentimes, again, you do these cool things. They get you exposure on social media. People think they look cool. Some dumb intern at Bleacher Report. And please, Bleacher Report, stop putting this shit out there because it's garbage. And a lot of people follow you and it gets a lot of exposure, and you got kids wanting to dance around on these balls and do stupid shit and get in their trainer's ear, and they just piss us off, and then the kids aren't happy, and then they want to do things that aren't going to help them, and then they're, you know, not getting any better, and we wonder why. Interns at Bleacher Report, stop posting this garbage, all right? Anyway, if it's got a lot of exposure, got a lot of likes, whatever, usually you just get exposure for doing ridiculous things that look cool. There are some people that are blessed and fortunate enough to get a lot of exposure for the right things. I'm one of them. I want to get even more exposure because I want to show more people the right things. So don't equate who people train and how many followers they have to how good they are or how quality the work is. I have some of the smartest coaches I'm connected with on Twitter, have about 350 followers, but they are damn smart people that I love talking to. So shout out to them, whoever they are. I mean, there's a lot of them. I know who they are. I'm not going to do names right now because I'll miss a bunch. But shout out to those people that are educated that don't have the platform. I'm going to give you that platform. That's my goal. End rant. God, I'm at almost 14 minutes here. I'm sorry, but I feel like this was valuable, so I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm officially shifting to Wednesdays. I want to have a day that everyone identifies for the release of the podcast. You know, I've been consistent with episodes. I think I've only missed 3 weeks since I've started, but I want to get more consistent with the day and not be, you know, Wednesday. Actually, fitting enough that the last two episodes I've released have been Wednesdays, but I've done Fridays, Thursdays before. I've done a couple Sundays. I want to make this an official Wednesday thing. Every Wednesday, you're going to get an alert on your phone because you're going to be lovely people and you're going to subscribe to this. So I know you're going to get the alert, or you're going to see me tweet about it or post it on my Instagram, etc. And Wednesday's going to be the day that you expect some knowledge bombs, some practical shit that you can apply to your training, to your athlete's training, to your son or daughter's training, or just to your mindset in general. If you're a young coach and you want to get better, this is the place for you. It's on Wednesdays. This meathead's taking over Wednesdays. All right? So, with that said, I'm very excited for today's episode. I'm hoping I don't butcher her last name right now. I'm going to say it one way now, and then I'll confirm with her when she comes on. But based on the way it's spelled, I'm going to take a guess here. Erica Suter. Erica is, if you follow her at Fit Soccer Queen on Twitter, she is amazing. Works with a lot of youth athletes, a lot of soccer players. She was a soccer player herself in college, and she's just an all-around badass, strong-ass woman who does some great stuff with her athletes. So I am thrilled to have her on to pick her brain. We're going over youth training, her background with her sports, and you know, how she got into training, and you know, a lot of, you know, building foundations for elite athletes, keeping things simple, and building a culture of strong and fast athletes. And then we're going to finish up, you know, with touching on some business, you know, private sector slash work related stuff. And of course, something that we both had success in is building a following and, you know, writing and doing things of that nature on social media. So buckle up, dig in. This is going to be a good one. I hope you guys didn't mind my rant. If you liked it, comment, let me know, because I'll do more of it for sure. If they're rants, but they have info in them, I have no problem, because it's not like it's going to be boring for you guys. So excited to have Erica on. Enjoy the show, and I will talk to you guys next week. Peace. All right, everyone. Excited to have Erica Suter come on the podcast. Erica, thanks so much for coming on. Excited to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So we've been kind of connected on Twitter for a little while. We've obviously, I've been seeing a lot of the stuff that you're doing, and I'm a fan of it, which is why I wanted to have you on. Just giving the listeners a little bit of an idea on, you know, your background. Obviously, those who know you have a soccer background and still do a lot of work with soccer. Obviously, it's like the main thing that you're doing with the training, but give the listeners a little bit of an idea on your background, you know, your own soccer career and things like that.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the game of soccer for over 25 years, started really young, and I played in college at Johns Hopkins University. And when I graduated, I went on to play in Brazil for a year. So I went down there to actually coach. And then once I got there, I trained with a local semi-professional team in Rio de Janeiro. So that was kind of the start of me wanting to coach full time when I graduated college. So been doing soccer coaching in the strength and conditioning realm for almost 8 years now. And I also mix that with technical skills training, which I do out on the field.
Very cool. So, you know, speaking of your own career and your experiences and things like that, and we're pretty close in age. So I say this all the time, but, you know, it's crazy to think how much has changed since, you know, I was coming up playing baseball, you playing soccer, with training and things of that nature. Things have changed like so quickly in the matter of, you know, 10, 15 years. What are some things that you didn't have, you know, coming up through your career that you give your athletes now in terms of, you know, training in both the soccer and the strength and speed stuff?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I think I'm a little bit of an oddball when it comes to this, because I was lucky to have a strength coach when I was in middle school. And I stayed with him all through middle school, high school, and even college. So this was back in like early 2000s. This was when strength and conditioning was starting to become known in the private sector. So when like guys like Mike Boyle were starting out and like Eric Cressy. So my strength coach did an off-season camp every summer, and it was like a 3-month long camp, and we'd be in the weight room 3 days a week and then on the field doing agility and running 2 days a week. And I did that for like 8 to 10 years as a kid. So that was the start of me getting involved in strength and conditioning and falling in love with performance training, not only because I saw the results on the soccer field and pretty much stayed injury free throughout my career, but I was becoming faster and just more confident and just loved fitness and movement. And it's just a huge part of my life now. And to look back on that, and that was like my initial inspiration. And I was lucky to have a strength coach as a young kid.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I can speak from experience. I didn't really have that, you know, going through high school and everything, and I would have loved to have had it. But it's interesting that you're coming from the other side of things, where it's like your experience, you know, and what you did have inspired you to, you know, want to get into it, versus someone like me who, wanted to, give, the high school and college athletes stuff that I didn't really have. So that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting to just see how it's all changed now, because I think now if I could wish something for my athletes is to actually give them less. Like, I feel like in strength and conditioning, there's so many like product mm-hmm. offerings and so much equipment now. Whereas like mm-hmm. back then when I was with my coach, all we needed was a weight room, which we had. It was in the basement of like a golf center, but all we needed was like dumbbells and barbells. And then we had a field, whether that was like a turf field or a grass field, and we got results. So I think now I would just wish for less things and just more simplicity.
Yeah. That's an awesome perspective. And like, not, everyone's always going to answer that question with like things they'd want to see, but it's actually like refreshing to hear like the other side of like, I'd actually like to take some things away because I think it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, there's just a lot of people overcomplicating things. And I think part of that is just, social media is to blame. And I don't know if it's like trainers trying to outdo each other or offer more things, but really simplicity is the most effective. And what kids really need is just a field, a weight room, and a coach who connects with them and motivates them. I think as long as you have those three things, they're going to get results.
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, having a coach that connects and motivates them, if we can't do that with the athlete, or if, the coach can't do that with the athlete, the knowledge we have, it could be the best in the world, but it's useless if they're not inspired to do what we're giving them, we're putting them in line to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you can agree that the more you spend in this career as a coach, you realize that like the exercise science and the X's and O's, it's important, but that's what's expected. Like, that should already be happening. Like mm-hmm. you should be well versed in that stuff. But it's really like the soft skills that strength coaches need so that they're inspiring their athletes to buy into their program and to love this stuff even when sports ends.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. It's like, if we're in this field, we should have the base of knowledge. It shouldn't be like a bonus that like we know what we're doing. No, like we should know what we're doing for sure.
Yeah, it's like we should do what's expected, and that's the training part. So it's like, how is everyone going to do what's not expected?
Yeah, no, I agree completely, especially with, that high school and college, or even like, a little younger middle school age. It's like really important to connect, because, once you have that, you can just do amazing things when you have their trust and they know that, you're putting them in the right position. And I don't like to say buy in, because it kind of like it sounds gimmicky in like terms of selling someone something, but if you can get them to like believe in what they're doing, I think it's right. A recipe for success for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you're playing at Johns Hopkins. What was your, you could talk about your career a little bit and some of the experiences you had. But educationally, like what your degree and everything, what were you, majoring in? Like, what was the program like? Stuff like that.
Yeah, so at Hopkins, I actually majored in economics. Okay. So now it's starting to play a role because I am a business owner. Yeah. So that ended up working out. But then after I graduated, I went to play in Brazil and coach down there. And then I started training a few athletes in a commercial gym, and actually started as a personal trainer working with Gen Pop for, I want to say, 3 years. And during that time, I got my CSCS, my strength and conditioning certification, because I was starting to work with more athletes. Mm-hmm. And I thought I wanted to go into the college sector of strength and conditioning, and did a few internships there. And I honestly did not, it wasn't for me. So I think I sort of found my passion working with kids, because I felt I really had to teach them, and I like to teach and work with beginners, and to also see someone grow for the long haul and really fall in love with the process of athletic development. I mean, looking back, I've started with some kids at like age 10, and now they're just like playing in college. So that for me is just so cool to see that growth over the years. And I think that's kind of why I found my place in youth strength and conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I had an experience like that this week. An athlete of mine had reached out to me, and you know, he was saying, you know, the differences he was noticing. That wasn't the, like the main point of it, but I think the coolest thing for me was kind of like what you were saying, that seeing him, you know, we started working together 2 years ago and in a team setting, and you know, it was kind of, he would do what the team did or what I was given to him and all that kind of stuff. But the last year or so, to see, like you said, them adopt the, you know, lifestyle and start to understand, you know, the why behind things and bring it, you know, to something where they do it on their own, I think it's like a really rewarding part of what we do, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And you make a good point that it's really teaching them to be autonomous and to do this stuff eventually when that sports career ends, and to be healthy, to be strong for a lifetime. So I think like that's what sold me with youth fitness, but also it's as simple as I just love to work with kids, and I would rather talk about like things like Fortnite or I don't know, amusement parks, candy, instead of like politics and drama with adults.
That's an amazing point. Like I say to people all the time how cool my job is, how cool our jobs are, that like, you know, in addition to training, you know, these kids, these, you know, college, high school, whatever age, training them, but like it keeps you young. I mean, we're young anyway, but like such a relief of, you know, you own a business, I own a business in addition to training, and it's a lot of stress, but being able to like kind of push that aside and actually like talk about like fun high school topics with kids is like, about, you know, what sporting event happened the night before, or like what song they like. They play ridiculous music or whatever that they're into. It's different, but it's an awesome thing for sure.
Yeah, it is. And it really gives you a chance to just be goofy. Like I feel like I am myself when I'm working with kids, and if I'm working with like professionals or even college students, like I don't feel like I'm 100% myself. And like, I want to be my true self when I'm coaching, and that's goofy and delivering the energy and just talking about all these random topics. So it's been really, really fun.
For sure. So, you know, obviously that being the inspiration, you know, why you wanted to get into that youth training side of things specifically, you know, speaking more on the youth, in your mind and your opinion, what are some of the most important things that like those athletes should be focusing on? And what are some important things that the coaches of those athletes should be coaching or should be like focusing on?
Yeah. So things they shouldn't be focusing on is becoming the next Instagram celebrity.
Right off the bat. Let's get that out of the
right
way
off
for sure.
I mean, so again, it's just coming back to keeping things simple and just working on the basic motor skills. So stability, coordination, all the components of strength, lower upper body, tying the core and hips together, and balance, posture. And I like to take those basic skills and turn them into fun drills for kids. So as an example, for maybe like upper body strength, we're doing pull up hang competitions to see who can hang on the bar the longest.
Yeah.
Or for stability, we're doing like a chaos, like dead bug drill, or power. This was one thing I started to do recently with my high schoolers, is we have like lower body power competitions every week for the broad jump. And not only are they like competing against their previous week's measurement, but they're competing against each other. So what I've found is when they compete, their form actually gets better, which is, it makes sense, because I tell them, look, like I'm not going to count your best measurement if you're not sticking your landing with stiffness and you're not getting a good counter movement. So it's been really cool to develop that culture of competition. And again, we don't need to get all crazy. We can just stick to the basics and add some fun and creativity to them.
For sure. And I think like back to what you said before, you know, people don't understand that when you're building a foundation, there's not a lot of fancy stuff that has to go into, you know, what that involves, right?
Yeah, absolutely not. And it's so funny, because I've had a couple of parents come to me. They have like really young kids, like 8 or 9 year olds. And I don't know what they're expecting me to do.
But, oh, like, my God, I couldn't agree more with you on that. I've had that same experience. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, and like they're expecting me to like run this like ridiculous session, like something you'd see on like the Manchester United Instagram or whatever. And I'm just like doing like bear crawls and then like crab walking, skipping in all planes of motion, reactive agility drills, fun races. I don't know what they expect. And I've actually like lost some people and they've gone
too.
to trainers who are less qualified, but they had the flash.
Yep.
And products and the equipment, which is fine. Like I can't.
You're cool with that, right? Because I watch for sure.
Oh, I absolutely am, and I love them and leave them, and that's just how it has to be. We do our best to educate, but it's really tough, and I'm sure you can say the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it becomes too stressful if like we have to train or if a coach has to train someone. You know, we're not, and I hope that, you know, a lot of coaches feel the same, but, you know, we're not going to go against our principles and our philosophies and what we believe in just to retain people. It's like not ethical. It's, you know, and it's not fair to us as coaches. Like a parent shouldn't be able to dictate, you know, what we do, you know, with their child, because at the end of the day, they're paying us for our knowledge, not to, you know, give us a list of things that they want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure like you're probably getting a lot of parents who feel this way about speed training.
Oh,
so, like,
yeah.
I can't remember. Like, I don't even think I've ever done this in 7 years. Like, I've never done like a super technical speed mechanic session like for a kid. Like, we've never done like A-skips or wall drills. It's just like, all right, we're going to line up. We're going to race. We're going to do relays. And everyone's swinging their arms as fast as they can. They're driving their knees. And that's what you're looking for. Like, we don't need to get so
technical. Especially at that age.
Yeah.
If you're looking, you know, working with 10 or 11-year-olds, like, putting them somewhere and saying, all right, like, I mean, there are some that can understand it. Maybe, like, a private setting. Like, if you have that one-on-one time and you see that they're, like, a little more advanced. And I've had that.
Yeah,
But to have a group of, like, 15, 12-year-olds and think they're going to, like, get in a line and, like you said, do an A skip or a B skip.
Yeah.
It's just one, it's not going to happen. I'm sure you could, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the same, on the same side of that, like they're going to be able to, like you said, if you put them in a line and say race each other, like their body's going to take over and self-organize at that age and start to do things the right way just from the environment you put them in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think, you know, there might be some special cases, like you said, like maybe a one-on-one setting where like a kid, I have this right now, like I have a 10-year-old with serious gait problems and a physical therapist like actually sent him to me. So he's like fine with getting like the technical breakdowns, but that's like a very specific case.
For sure.
So with like a group, like you said, you want to keep it fun, you want to keep the session moving, and you want to keep them engaged.
Yeah, I mean, and on top of the fact that, like, you know, as a strength coach, and I think you could agree with this, but we see a lot of coaches try to get into things that they're not experts in. You know,
yeah.
There's a track coach, and then there's a strength coach who teaches sprinting. There's two there's a big difference, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to, and I'm sure you would say the same thing, I'm not going to ever think that I would go out on a track with a track coach and be as good as they are at, or even close to as good as they are at teaching sprinting. I can teach sprinting in a basic sense and know a lot about it, but I'm not going to, you know, be able to prep an athlete to run a, you know, 100 meter or, you know, work on skips or hurdles. Like, that's not what I do, or not what we do. Like, we do a part of that, but not that entirely.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think like the more you get into this career, you realize like it's okay to outsource.
For sure.
And to send your clients to people you like really respect and who do a good job, whether that's like a track coach or physical therapist or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if I have someone come to me and say, "Hey, I want to, you know, be a track star," I'm like, "You're probably in the wrong place."
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be an athlete that gets faster and becomes a better sprinter, then right guy, but like, you know, in your case, like, you know, I'm the right person for you. But if you're looking to actually be like a track athlete, like go find a track coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you mentioned, and I've seen you talk a lot about this on Twitter and we've gotten into it a little bit, but keeping things simple, a little more on the, you know, how and why behind that, like maybe start with the why of why you want to keep it simple, and then like how you go about, you know, making kids understand that the simple is often better.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of strength and power development, there's a lot of basic movements that kids need to be get down. So, split squatting, lunging, deadlifting, carrying, planking. So that's where I like to keep it simple, because those are movements that I'm eventually going to load with heavier weight. And just from a safety standpoint, and just from like a performance and science-based standpoint, that's how they get stronger, is by doing the simple things and progressing them over time. But that isn't to say I don't get creative. I always, like, my training philosophy is have simplicity with a sprinkle of creativity. So every exercise has some sort of creative variation to it, whether that's changing your grip, changing your stance, maybe adding chaos to a movement. There's so many ways to do something. And if someone can prove to me that they can get something simple down, then yeah, I'll add in some creativity so that they're not getting bored with the program.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like, you can be simple and progress accordingly. Like, it doesn't have to always stay simple. Like, yeah. People don't understand that. Just because it starts simple doesn't mean it's going to stay there, or it has to stay there. But if you don't, I had an analogy once where it's like building a house and, you know, trying to put the roof on before you have the whole thing, you know, framed up and whatever, it's going to just blow over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a great analogy. And I think, like, from a strength and power standpoint, you have to keep it simple, but the creativity will come in when you're doing your agility and your conditioning. Today we did dodgeball as kind of like spatial awareness agility drill, and the kids loved it. And
yeah, it's nice to see them get fired up and get into it, right?
Yeah, it was. I even got in there. I was like dodging balls. I was like,
it's fun. Yeah, I've done the same thing with mine before. It's a good time for sure.
It's so great. And like, you realize like how much reactivity it takes and how much scanning, and just even just like the upper body and like rotational power. Like, there's so much athletic carryover to any sport. So we've done that.
Absolutely. Moving athletically is like the key to everything.
Oh yeah, definitely. So yeah, like dodgeball, we've done like tug of war. We've like ran to the playground and done monkey bars, different tag variations. I take my soccer girls boxing every Saturday morning. Like, it's crazy. So it's not like we're just doing like squatting and planking over here. We're mixing it up and having fun while building athletes.
For sure. Just a question, because now I'm curious. And I'm actually, what you brought up kind of reminded me of it, but my athletes the other day were like, "Coach, you got to lift with us sometime, like do a leg day or something." And I'm I'm heavily considering it. Have you ever lifted with any of your athletes, maybe some of the older girls or guys or like whoever you're working with? Like, I'm curious.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah. So I've like played soccer with like my younger athletes. Like, we've done like pickup games and stuff, but like, as far as lifting, yeah, I've lifted with the older girls. We've like ran suicides on the soccer field in 100-degree weather. And looking back, that was probably not a good idea.
we're getting too old for that. It happens quickly.
Yeah, I was like, gosh, I like need to like outwork them, because that's like,
yeah, you don't want to look
part
bad,
of our
right?
culture. Like, yeah, yeah, and it's like our culture. Like, don't get outworked. Like that, I always say that. But yeah, it's just. It's interesting when you get in there, because I think your athletes are just like, wow, like they're like a living example of, you know, what they're telling me to do.
Yes. It's important to have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know there's so many schools of thought. Like, I know Mike Boyle always says, well, I haven't worked out in 20 years, which is fine. Like, I mean, he's.
Yeah. There's cases for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like, it really depends on who you are. I don't think there's a right or wrong here, but, I'm sure like your athletes love it when you get in there. So I think it's good.
Yeah, no, for sure. Funny, like, you know, your suicide story, I kind of have a similar story where I had put together like a full body, you know, repetition hypertrophy day for one of my groups, and I had to work out. I hadn't worked out yet. So I was like, Let me go through this. I kind of like looked at it. I was like, I really liked it when I was putting it together. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. Right. So I'm going through it. Maybe it may have been like 8 different exercises, like a push, a pull, a squat, like pretty basic stuff, but like a lot of like negatives and, slow reps. So I'm like on exercise 2 and I'm like, man, like I sometimes look and I'm like, I might be a little too hard on these guys. Cause I'm doing it and I'm like, there's no way I'm making it through this. And I look over at the board and I'm like, you know what? If I'm having them do it, like I gotta be able to finish this.
Right.
And that's... like I got through it and I felt good afterwards, but you're like, wow, like it gets up on you fast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I'm sure like they just appreciate you doing that and going through it with them. Cause then they're like, well, look what you put us through, you know?
Well that, yeah, it's like, oh, like I want to see you do this. I'm like, well, I can, if I actually need to. So like, shut up and go work. It's like,
yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, things like that, like it's been huge for me and I'm sure for you as well in terms of building a culture. You know, how important in your mind is that, like that building, you know, an identity, a reputation of like what training with you is going to be about and what, you know, all the athletes can expect from one another. Like what's that been like and how important is that for you?
Yeah. Culture is everything to me because culture keeps kids doing the program and keeps them passionate about all this stuff. For me, like my culture is hard work pays off and everything is a competition, but we're hardcore in a very fun way. So like I said, we're doing ridiculous things. Like I'm taking my girls boxing. I'm doing pull-up competitions with my soccer guys. Oddly enough, for some reason, I've developed soccer guys into meatheads who want to lift, which is it's been a That's that awesome. In itself is a tough culture, is the male soccer culture, because they're really focus on skills training and
it's
being on the field. So that's been nice to see with the guys. But I'm just one of those coaches who leads by example and just in everything I do. So everything I do in life, whether that's career or my creative work or my own training, I work really hard and I'm consistent myself and I just exude that to my athletes. So I think they've definitely been able to catch on and they want to kind of live up to that. And
yeah, for sure.
It's really cool to see because we're all holding each other accountable. And when people reach out to work with me, they already know this going in that like who I am.
Yeah.
So,
and you want that for sure, because there's almost like a point where you want to attract the athletes you want to work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to attract the athletes that I can truly impact. And by that, I mean, like, if I have a parent saying, well, my daughter can only make it in once a week, I just tell them, I'm like, I can't help your daughter get to where she needs to go, given the goals you just told me she has. And I just am super honest about that. And it comes out of a place of care. Like I want them to be consistent so they can reach their goals. So usually like the one time a weekers, like that rarely happens anymore because I can't truly help them. And I'm sure you can say the same with your baseball guys.
Yeah. I mean, it makes it unfair to us too, because one, it's unfair to the athlete first and foremost, like they're the most important person in the equation. But you know, us as coaches, like you're giving us all these goals and these expectations and it's like you're setting us up to fail by saying we could only have them for one day.
Yeah.
Like it makes it like, impossible for us. Like we're going to look bad no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like one day, that's 1 hour, maybe 75 minutes a week. Like that's crazy. And I always flip it back on the parents or even the kid. And I'm like, well, would you brush your teeth 1 hour a week? Would you, that's gross. Would you do homework one day a week? Would you practice your musical instrument one day a week and expect to get better and be the best you can be? And they're just like, no. I'm like, well, we're on
that's different.
Yeah.
That's like, you get that response sometimes. I have for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's crazy because we can also compare it to like baseball and soccer. It's like, you don't learn how to be a good batter from working on your batting 1 hour a week. So
yeah,
like,
no, it's a lot of reps for sure.
Yeah. So it's like, why do people think strength training and power development is any different? That's like what still blows my mind, even in year 7 of doing this. I'm like, how do people not see that, like, you need to be consistent?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's actually like kind of cool to see the athletes sometimes push the parents like, hey, like, listen, I need to be here 3 days a week at least. Like,
yeah,
I have my college groups running 4 days right now. They're Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And it's been one of the best summers. I've had these guys for this, our third year. We've gone from 3 up to 4, and it's been like the best summer we've ever had.
Yes. And that's like, and that's so awesome when that happens, because then everyone is getting better. Like, it's
yeah.
just,
and they notice it too. Yeah,
exactly. It's like coming back to the culture thing. Like, I've gotten my soccer guys to do 4 days a week as well. And that happened because like, it started with just like 2 guys doing it. And yeah. then I was yep. like, well, like, Mason and Trevor are doing 4 days a week. Like, what are you guys doing? And yeah, they're just sure. like, oh shoot, like, we got to get in.
Or
and
else so we look then bad. It's like,
yeah. And it's that competitive culture. Like, but they see results from 3-4 days a week is ideal. And
yes,
this is why summer has been so fun for me. And I'm sure for you, like, it, this has been literally the best off season ever.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, this time of year is when I get, you know, my 30, you know, hockey, like, I work with some organizations in a team sense, but in the private side of my business, getting, you know, 30 to 35, you know, hockey guys separated into groups and running them through 3 to 4 days a week consistently, it's like the best time for me, like you said.
It's, yeah, it's so awesome, because then you can truly like be a coach and
we're not dodging in season obstacles. We're not, you know,
yeah.
working around a lot of games. Like, we have our, you know, hands on them in a consistent sense for, you know, 4 months. It's fantastic.
Yes. And it's, yeah, like 3 to 4 months is just like, you can change someone in that amount of time.
Oh, for sure. Even if they're the most advanced athlete, like, you can get a lot out of them in like peak speed, let's just say. Like, you can impact a lot in just that, you know, 12 to 16 week period.
Yeah, it's great. And I think that's like another beauty of like the private sector, which I'm sure we'll get into, is like, I feel we're given more time and freedom to really build the athletes.
Yep.
And we're not as restricted.
Because it's on our time and it's on their time. No one else is, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, and we're not getting like scrutinized by like a team coach yes. about like our programming. It's like, no, the programming is based on like the results our athletes are getting. Yep. And like, as long as they're getting results, our programming's pretty darn good.
For sure. Just something this kind of wasn't a planned question, but you brought it up and it's interesting. And I think it's important for the listeners and any, you know, aspiring female strength coaches who are listening. I hope I do have some. I know I'm a guy and I have a lot of male followers, but it'd be awesome and huge if I knew I had some female coaches listening. But what is it like gaining? It's unfortunate in the world that we live in that like things like this exist. But there's a stereotype of like, oh, a guy, like, I can't have a woman coach me, right? Like,
yeah.
How have you gotten through that? Like, what's the relationship like that you have with your male players? Like, how is, give me insight on everything about that.
Yeah, well, the first couple sessions, I don't smile.
you gotta scare yeah. him a little bit, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I'm just myself. Like, I am a very
you're intense. You could tell.
Yeah, I'm a very serious coach. I am very organized, so I think they see that, and they just yeah, the male athletes have been great and super. Super respectful. They shake my hand every time they come in, every time they leave.
Awesome.
So yeah, I mean, I've never really run into trouble. I think like I did, oh, this is actually a funny story. So this happened this year. I had a team of soccer guys. They're 14 year olds. So they're all going to be freshmen in high school. And this one kid was just like constantly talking. And as I was explaining drills and like shoving his friends and throwing them into the wall, and I kicked him out. I was like, you get out. And he like looks at me like the world's ending. I'm like, yes, like get out.
Yeah, like you weren't expecting this, but like get the hell out. I'm dumb. I'm not putting up with it.
Yep. And he left, and then I didn't see him for 3 months. And then I asked his teammates, I was like, yo, where's this guy? Like, why isn't he coming back in? And they're like, well, you scared him. And I was like, but I'm not mad at him. I just like, I want him to come back in to get better. So he came back in this week and I was like, dude, like I haven't seen you in 3 months. What happened? Like, we miss you. Like, we want you to be here. And like, since I said that, he was like so tuned in and so focused this week. Because like, for me, like, I don't get mad if someone's doing that. It's just more like, I want you to make the most of your time when you're working out in here. So,
and other people are trying to get better too, so you can't screw it up for them.
Exactly. And I think, like, you know, if it, with like female coaches who are listening and getting into this, you just have to be a coach, like whether you're male, female, like every coach, you need to be serious. You need to be organized. You need to know what you're talking about. And you also need to come from a place of care and wanting to help your athletes do their best when they're training with you.
For sure. I actually, like, I've had, you know, you talked about setting the tone right away, like being a woman coach with male athletes. I've had the opposite problem as a, you know, it's great. Like, I love who I am and being a large person and a big dude and everything, but like, it scares some people. And like, I've had some girls and even like young kids. Like, I had a funny story where, one of my privates was like, hey, one of the kids on my team that I play for is like super scared of you. I'm like, I've never even talked to him before. Like, why is he afraid of me? Right. And he was like, oh, like, like, you're big, like they're afraid of you. Like, I'm like, but I'm the nicest person ever. It creates a problem, like with some of the, you know, girls that I've had, and I have trouble attracting, you know, female clients because of that. I think that one, it's like a stereotype, like, you know, girls should work with girls and guys should work with guys type of thing. But you just, like, you have to set the tone with the males. I have to kind of like let the females know that I'm not like the big bad wolf.
Yeah. And gosh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. That must be hard because
it's tough. It's tough for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they're just judging a book by its cover, but I'm sure like once they work with you after even just like a week of sessions, they're like, okay, like this guy like just wants us to get better.
Yeah.
Like, this guy cares. And as long as athletes see that you care, then
yes,
the rest should become easy.
Yeah. I mean, my first client was, I think she was a senior in high school at the time, the softball player, like the sweetest girl ever. And she was like, all I had was her for a little bit. And we like really meshed well and connected. And we like, for the first couple of weeks, we probably said three words to each other every session. And it was just her working. And then we couldn't shut up. It was just crazy. Like, once you break that wall and get over that hump, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really all about the relationship and the respect and the trust.
For sure. So you mentioned a great point about, you know, having the freedom and the flexibility in the private sector, you know, to do what you want and not be impacted by sport coaches and everything. But there are some, you know, I won't say shortcomings, but there are some added stresses to, you know, being in the private sector, having your own business while also trying to juggle coaching. You know, what, in your opinion, like, what does it take to make it in the private sector?
Oh man,
it's a lot. I don't know if you could. I know it's hard to. It's a loaded question, but
it is. I would definitely say a lot of resilience and just being able to adapt. I mean, it's never going to be perfect whether you're in college or private sector, but if you have a passion for doing your own thing and realizing that sometimes you have to say no to being with your friends on the weekends, and you're going to go through times like that where you don't see people and you isolate yourself. But for you, like, the costs are worth the benefits, and the benefits are sometimes you're able to be on your own schedule. You're able to have freedom in writing your programs.
Yes.
You can choose who you want to work with eventually. So there's a lot of pros and cons, but you choose what cons you want to put up with. Like, for me, like, if I did the college sector, I don't think showing up for a 5:30 a.m. lift was worth it for me.
I couldn't agree more. I'd rather, you know, work till 12, you know, midnight every night than get up at 5:30.
Exactly. Yeah, same.
That's not to say our hours aren't crazy, but like, there's...
Oh, they are.
you know, our hours are insane, but like, when we can say, hey, I want to get into work at 9 and then leave at 8 instead of getting in at, you know, 5 and leaving at 4. Like, that's our preference, and we have the luxury to, you know, the carte blanche to do what we want to do because it's our business.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, you can agree with me here. Like, it's so nice to sometimes just have your mornings, especially, like, during the school year. For me, like, I do a lot of writing, and like,
I couldn't agree more with that. I'm looking forward to that time, yeah. You know, come September. I obviously love the summer, but having those morning hours, like you said, when like there's kids are all in school or the teams aren't able to work with you till the afternoon and you can get some stuff done, it's a great time.
Yeah, it is. It's a great time to be with yourself or just kind of take your time getting up before you're in like full on like sympathetic nervous system mode and like replying to everyone.
Oh my God. The 400 text messages are there and you're like, oh, I got to answer all these right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there's the private sector is not easy. And I think strength coaches who are new to it and who are set on running their own business need to also realize it might not be until like after year 5 where you're like, oh, I feel like I got this now. Like year 7, like this year for me is like the best year I've had. And I finally feel like, wow, like I'm pumped. Like this is great. Like I'm in a good spot, but like, I'll tell you, like those first couple years, like I was really questioning. I was like, how am I going to even do this?
Yeah, no, it's like, you're wondering if it's going to be something that you can sustain, financially. I mean, like above all else, like, it really is a shame that people make it so like we have to be ashamed of making a good living doing what we do. But that obviously, like, that's a big part of it. Like, we could like coaching as much and love it as much as we want, but like, we have bills to pay. We have to, like, you know, earn money, and you have to see, can I do this? Can I go a year and not make anything and hope that it'll, you know, turn into something that where I can make something? It's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that. Like, there is kind of a lot of shame around like doing what you love and making money from it.
It's terrible. It's truly terrible.
I just like can't even believe that's a thing. Like, I think like the people who are saying that are the ones who didn't figure out how to do what they want to do and make money. And the rest of us like put in the work for all those years and figured it out. And like, for me, it's like not even about the money at this point. It's like, am I providing enough value and impact?
Exactly. Yep.
And yeah, I can confidently answer that question. Like, heck yeah, I am. Like, not even just for like soccer performance, but just like for life and just being a role model to a lot of young athletes. So for me, it's more about the impact, but obviously, like, we do need to pay bills, and like the fact that I eat a good breakfast like gives me better energy to coach. You know, like,
yeah, I'm not sleeping on like an air mattress. I could actually like get good rest and be better for my athletes tomorrow.
Yeah, and you also need like gas money to drive to work to help your athletes. So like, everyone needs to stop talking about money.
No, for sure.
So funny. Yeah. I could do a separate podcast on this.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like, it'll drive you crazy. It really will. Just as much as, like we said, you know, getting, you know, 400 text messages, like, you're always available, you know, to your athletes to an extent, but like, we can easily get burnt out. And like, in your opinion, what would you say is like the best way to avoid that? Like, in terms of, maybe it's good to not always be available.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, it's, there are some days where, especially like now, like when I have my weekends off from coaching, like I wake up and I'm just like, not today, Erica. Like, don't open your computer. Don't go on your phone. Just don't do it. And it's so hard, and it's such a real problem. I think like a lot of us in the private sector are like so addicted to being busy and like being on, like we need to know when we're pushing ourselves too hard. And I think like, I really am starting to pay attention to like my energy and my mood. And that's when I take a step back. So this year I've definitely made a lot more time for my friends. And every Sunday I see my family, I go biking with my dad and get dinner with my parents. And that's like, that's Sundays. Like, that's like set in my schedule. And just really making the time to see my friends who are also they're in different industries, like nurses, photographers. And it's just nice to be around people and discuss other things.
Then like, what as much we do, as, yes.
Yeah, and it's like we love training. Like I love like nerding out on this stuff, but at the same time, I'm a multi-dimensional person and I like other things and I want to learn about other things. So it's been important for me to be able to get that time with my friends and do other activities. I'm also a big snowboarder, so I take a lot of snowboarding trips
Yeah,
every
you've mentioned
year.
that to me before.
Yeah. So that's kind of my way to like regroup, as adrenaline filled as that hobby is.
It's a release, so to speak, though, definitely. Like just like the
It is.
endorphins you get from lifting, it's like the same concept.
It really is. And it's just like just being like on the mountain and in nature is a different vibe, really relaxing vibe. So I've definitely done that. But I'm curious to what you do, and I'm sure it's hard for you too because it's just like owning your business and coaching on top of that and doing your own marketing and PR. It's a lot. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a good point about like being addicted to being busy, to the point where like you're working, and you're like, man, I can't wait to have a second to just be by myself. And then you get that second and you're like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yes, it's so
It's
real.
real. It's tough. And it's like almost like it's scary in a sense, 'cause you're like, I have free time tonight, and you almost like dread it 'cause you don't know what to do. And you're like, dude, like, I'm like, dude, put the phone down. Like, I know you love tweeting and like getting, sending stuff out to people and like putting information out there. And it's like fun, like to get the engagement and the growth and the interaction. But like, it's okay to, leave your phone on the table for a Saturday and go out and like enjoy stuff with your family for a little bit.
Yeah. It's and like for like people who have like a, like a pretty substantial following on Twitter, like we do. Like it's hard because like I'm sure you're getting DMs from just random
Oh, yeah, all the
people
time.
just asking you training questions and like it's awesome to like be able to like be at that level where people see you as an expert and it's like, wow, like people are reaching out to me like for advice, like and like
And you want to answer everybody, and it's hard not to.
Yeah. And you want to answer everyone. And like, of course I'm so grateful to just, even have people reaching out. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think people understand, like we're like coaching and in the trenches in real life. So like we can't respond right away.
Yep.
And like, it's almost like you have to like train your followers that you're not going to respond for like a week. And
Yeah.
that's okay.
I
And like,
responded a month after, and it's still helpful to them if that I got back to them in some way.
Yeah, and at least you got back to them. Like I definitely like Mike Boyle says this all the time. He's like, I respond to everything and I love that. And like it doesn't matter if you respond in an hour or in a week or a month from now. It's like just respond and like you'll still answer their question and you're not being a complete a-hole.
Just like they can't, the followers need to understand too. Like, there's a way to go about it. Like,
Yeah.
don't DM me or don't DM you saying, "Hey, I need this." Like, excuse me.
Yeah, like first of all, my name is Erica. Nice to meet
Like, can I help you? Maybe. Like,
you. Yeah.
if it's 10 p.m. and I just trained all day, maybe don't want to have to go through my inbox and write about training that I just did for 12 hours.
Yeah, and that it's so crazy. Like, and most of these DMs or texts are coming at like 10 p.m. at night. It's like, first of all, what is everyone doing? Like, I'm like in my bed at this point,
Yeah, well, like me yesterday when I texted you and was like, "Yeah, I'll send you the show notes tomorrow because I'm going to bed."
Yeah,
I was
I'm
like,
like
"I just showered and fell on my bed. Luckily, like, had enough awareness to get dressed first before I fell asleep. Like, I'm gonna just stay here."
I love that you sent that text because I was in the same position. I was just like in my bed, lights were about to go out, and
I was like,
just
"It's
like,
okay if I send her this outline tomorrow. I think we'll all survive."
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like you need to realize that like things can wait and like I think everyone's just so like used to like getting everything like right this second. Like, like I'm at Starbucks, like where's my caramel macchiato? Like it needs to come right this second. It's like, come on, like
Yeah.
we all can be a little bit more patient and a little bit more grateful. Like it's not that serious.
Yeah. I mean, I had a guy, another coach on Twitter the other day called, like, he tweeted out to people, like, to listen to the show and was like, this guy's a machine, joking around that I put a lot of episodes out frequently. And I laughed and it was like funny and everything, but I'm like, people need to realize that, like, we short circuit and need a break sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and it's so true. Like, even just like beyond like your business, like you're also like doing this podcast and creating content. So like that's even just like a separate component to all this. Like I'm writing articles. It takes me like an hour to write a 2,000 word piece. Like that's a lot of work. And like a lot of that work happens on the weekends.
Yes.
You know,
like we're on our weekend right now and we're recording this.
It's Friday night.
Yeah.
Just FYI, it is 5:30 on a Friday night, everyone.
And we are deeply entrenched in a podcast. That is our life.
Yes, but we love it.
I'm hoping to squeeze a drink in tonight. I might be sitting home, but if I am, I might squeeze a drink in to retain some kind of human quality in my life.
And then go to bed by 9:30 again.
Yes, very, very vibrant and loud Friday for me if I make it past 10 o'clock.
Crazy Friday night.
Yeah, for sure. So just kind of wrapping things up a little bit, just staying on the social media topic, we're talking about some of like the pitfalls of avoiding burnout, and that's just huge for, you know, any coaches listening and hopefully some people listening who follow us are not afraid to reach out to us anymore. But what would you say, you know, your opinion in terms of like if someone wants to build a following or a platform on social media in the organic sense, like, are there people that have more followers than us? Yes, but we've also done it without, like, paying for it and getting, you know, followers, you know, non-organically. So in your mind, like, what does it take in terms of the consistency and maybe with your writing and other things like that you're doing?
Yeah, well, absolutely consistency, but it has to be consistency with something you want to do. So maybe you're an Instagram person and you're good at making video. Maybe you're good at writing and want to only do blogs. Maybe you want to own Twitter and just like have these awesome like soundbite tweets. So just really being consistent with what you want to do. I think a lot of people make the mistake. They're like, oh, I'm going to start a blog just because like I need to like get some content out there. And I'm like, well, do you even like writing? And they're like, hell no. It takes me 5 days to write one article. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to cut it. Like, so yeah, just really finding like what type of content you want to create and what you're willing to do on the weekends. Like I happily will write an article on a Saturday or Sunday. Like I love it. Whereas for me,
like I look at you sometimes and you're like, you're releasing an article like once a week at the least, right?
At the least. Yeah.
And I'm like, my God, like she's out there like, 2,000 words. I've written probably 50 plus articles in my life, but in my career, but they were more stacked towards the beginning when I was just starting out and trying to get some word out there. So like, I don't really do it much anymore. It's more transition to like, obviously the podcast and everything. But, for me, like it takes no effort or no, it's enjoyable for me to just rapid fire tweets out where I'm sure you or other people look at me like, my God, this guy just tweets everything. Like it's like, what I enjoy and you enjoy the writing and it's not a job to us.
Yeah, exactly. And like, yeah, I look at like people who are like super like active and like constantly like tweeting like nuggets on like training or videos or whatever. And I'm like, wow, like that's what they're owning. And that's great.
Whereas
like,
for you, it's the writing and I could never do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a true creative. And like, if you're like a creative or a writer, you have to be a little bit, you have to have some madness in you. So
for sure.
I don't know what it is, but, yeah, I mean, I've just always been a writer and, it's just, I think I started my blog back in, I want to say 2015. So it's been 4 years and okay. I'm at like over 20,000 unique views a month, which is like,
that's awesome.
Shitload. Yeah.
That is a lot. For like not paying for them. Cause I have to keep saying that because like, there's going to be some jerk out there that's like, oh, I know this person has like, you know, 50,000. I'm like, yeah, but like, dude, they're paying for them. They're buying followers. Like this is just literally a following created off good information.
Yes. And that's another thing. Like I think new people need to like realize that like paying for followers and like the amount of followers is not always the best way to go.
It's a very shallow way to go about it for sure.
It is. And it's like, are they like followers you want? Like, are they specific to like your niche and like the audience you want to reach, or is it just a bunch of randos?
And are they engaging?
Yes, and engagement is so key, and just having conversations with your people and like not just being like this like cyber celebrity, but like being a human like that they can like talk to or reach out to. Like, I'd rather have my, I think I have like 3,000 followers or something on Twitter. Like, I'd rather that and like people who like really like love the work and resonate with it than like 20,000 with like a bunch of trolls thrown in. Like,
yeah. Or just like people who don't need like 20,000 followers and you get 3 likes. Like, it's just.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, engagement. Engagement is key.
I actually, yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I told a story today to one of my athletes about, they said to me like, coach, it's been really cool to see like all the followers you've been gaining on Twitter. And I'm like, I think the coolest thing, if you had asked me about that, like you said, I'm what 5,000 something, whatever the hell it is. But like, the coolest part to me has been the way that I got there has literally just been organic, just putting information out there.
Yes.
And you get to the point when it's done that way, like you could have 5,000, 10,000, but like, I know a lot of these people when they like something, I'm like, oh, I remember that guy. Like,
yes,
that so name true. Sticks out to me. And I told him, I'm like, you know, the importance to me is that. And I reference a story that there was, I guess you can call her an influencer. It's a derogatory term at this point, but on Instagram, there was this story that I read where this girl had an account with maybe like 2 million followers. And she was like, oh, maybe it's time to capitalize on my followers by putting a clothing line out, right?
Right.
And it was really sad because you never want to see someone fall on their face. But she put this clothing line out and 20 people placed orders. And it's like the percentage, like I'm sure we could put something out right now with like our few thousand and get like probably double or triple that.
Oh, totally.
And it's like, what's the engagement percentage?
Yes. And it's like the more you engage with people, the more they trust you. And like when you release a product, they're like, oh, like – Erica's like put out like all this great content on this like niche topic. So we know what she's about. Whereas like the influencer you were talking about, like she hasn't really like gained trust because it's just a bunch of pictures,
wearing clothes, like dresses or at the beach. Like, what is she doing? Like, we provide something and people trust us and want to support us.
Yep. I actually, it's so funny you said that story because like, you know how there's like a bunch of like physical therapy accounts on Instagram, like people with like thousands of followers posting like rehab exercises and like it shows like the muscle group and stuff, whatever.
Oh, wait, it looks like a spam page. It's the same thing every time. Like, it's the same layout every post, actually. And I'm not going to mention names on here, but I'm going to text you somebody afterwards and see if it's someone you've seen before, because I have a person that came to mind when you said that.
Yeah. So it's like I heard like, you know, someone who like has a ton of followers who like posts like all these videos, like they have trouble getting online clients.
Yeah.
Which like it makes sense because like they're posting like all of the movements and all the muscle groups. So like, why would the online client like really want to work with them? Like it's, and also it's just like, they're probably not really engaging as much.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this. I try not to cut people off on here, but I had this thought was popped into my head real quick.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned like it's a video and there's like the same guy or girl that's a coach and they're always, you know, it's them doing the exercises, whatever. People want to see us working with other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we're going to get so much more engagement and so much more of a likelihood to attract an online client or a new client in person or whatever it is. If like our videos are instructional and teaching something, but it's us actually like, oh, this person actually works with people. They're not just doing all their videos of them, right?
Yes, that's so true. It's like they want to see you practicing your craft with other humans, or maybe even just like your personality. Like, what are your hobbies? Like, who are you? Like, I'm posting pictures of my cat and everyone's like, oh, that's awesome.
Like, like me posting a story about like the steak I'm having on Saturday. Like, this guy's a real person, or this, or she's a real person. Like, they're not just a bot that's like putting out pictures of muscles every day.
Yeah. It really comes down to like showing what you're doing like in person and like who you are, like sharing your story and just parts of your life.
The biggest reason people ask me like, hey, do you ever regret having your, you know, business page? And like 90% of what goes on there is my training and what I do, but the account still says, like, you know, it says Challenger Strength and it's for my business and for my brand, but the name on the account is my name and it's me, but it's, I'm the business, right? So it's like, yeah, you know, people can see every so often parts of my life and they know that, like, I took a page like Joe DeFranco does a really good job with his page where it's like, it's at DeFranco's gym and it's his business, his podcast go on there, all that other stuff. But every so often there's a picture of him and his daughters or him and his wife or a Mother's Day post. Yeah. Like, it's still him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's just like super relatable.
Yeah, for sure.
I also think, like, you know, just like being memorable. Like, I love how like you like use your Bitmoji like on your Twitter page. Like, I think that's like just so amazing. It's like so memorable.
My friend, I'm going to shout him out because he's going to be pissed if I don't. My friend Jack was like, oh, dude, this podcast, I have a great idea. I'm like, what's up? Like, hit me with it, right? And he's like, oh, like, you gotta get your Bitmoji. Like, your whole premise of your podcast is like muscles and management, so like business and training, right?
Yeah.
So get your Bitmoji in a suit, like the business side. And then, you know, you can get like these copy and paste, like pictures of your Bitmoji in different settings and do it like in a suit with like weights around them. And I was like, man, that's a really good idea.
What's your friend's name?
My friend's name is Jack. I'm shouting him out, Jack. Shout out to you.
Jack, you're a genius. I love it.
He was like, that's great. I took it and ran with it. And like, now that Bitmoji is like what you see, like when I post a podcast or it's like my cover photo, it's me with the weights around. And like you said, it's relatable and people recognize it. And
yes. Yeah. It's like personal branding. I could say the same with like the Fit Soccer Queen persona.
Do you have a Bitmoji?
No, not. I don't really use it that much.
If you have one, I might have you. I make a cover art for some episodes with my Bitmoji and the guest Bitmoji put together.
Oh, I love that.
So please. I might have to have you send me your Bitmoji doing like soccer or something, and I'll put it with mine.
Actually, I was gonna say, like, so I'm like obsessed with the queen emoji. So
yes.
Maybe you can just do the Fit Soccer Queen emojis.
I'll put a crown and like, yeah, I'll do something like that. Yes. I'll do something funny.
It's so funny because a lot of people are like, what's up with the Fit Soccer Queen? I'm like, honestly, like, it's just like me. Like,
yeah, it's like it, a little bit of your personality, a little bit of what you do.
Yeah.
It stuck out to me. Like when I first saw you, I don't know. I really couldn't tell you because it's been a little while about like how I found you or how we came across each other. But the name stuck out to me for sure when I first saw you on Twitter, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's important.
No, that's really good. I'm glad it worked.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like the things that, and I'm sure we didn't go into this with this like bulletproof concrete plan. Like these are things we stumbled upon and we've done, but we've seen that they've worked. So like, why not share them with other people?
That's so true. That's so true.
I didn't have a book of these listed and then I was like, oh, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. And it's funny because you got inspiration from your friend and it's just like inspiration,
yeah, right?
You either get from others or just like from your own mind. And like, yeah, you just kind of stumble upon, you're like, oh, that's a good idea.
The name of the podcast was from an athlete of mine, actually.
Oh, even better.
Real last story, because I don't want to have a 2-hour episode that everyone's going to be like, oh my God, that's too long. But
we're heading that way.
Well, my rant was 16 minutes that I recorded prior to this. So they're going to get that before they even hear us talk. So, I'm going to send that. You'll enjoy that when you listen to the episode because I went in on some stuff. But I was originally going to name the podcast, I think it said biceps and business or business. And, I think it was business and biceps, right?
Okay.
So I'm all excited. I put this name together and I Instagram storied it back in like November, right? And one of my followers DM'd me like, hey, I'm like so happy to hear you're doing this. Like, I would love to, you know, hear, you know, you talk about training and stuff like that. But is your podcast name based on this podcast? And they sent me a link. And I think if mine was biceps and business, theirs was business and biceps, right? It was the exact opposite, but like the same exact thing.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, like that. I literally had no idea this existed. It was a pretty big podcast actually. So I had to go like change the name and I'm like scrambling for a name. And I can't think of what I want to call it. And I'm in the gym one day and one of my hockey kids looks at me, he's like, what about muscles and management? Because like they were all trying to like think of like alliteration and names for me. And I'm like, oh, I like that a lot. And then here we are. So between the cover art being my friend and the name being an athlete of mine, I'm like, do I come up with anything on my own or like what?
That's so cool. I love that. And that's just, again, that's just like the beauty of being an entrepreneur is like you can just be creative. Yeah. And like you get your inspiration from everywhere and you can just do whatever the hell you want. Like
it was cool that like the athlete cared enough to help me. Like he wanted to, you know, contribute in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And shout out to him as well.
Yeah. Good. No, I mean, his name is, I'm going to shout him out too. It's Ryan. Ryan, shout out to you for the name. Jack, shout out to you for the cover art. I guess I'm just some dweeb who talks off of your creation. So thank you for that, guys. But yeah, that was that was an awesome episode. That was great. Anything you want to leave anyone with, anyone who's listening, just kind of put a bow on what we just talked about?
No, I think
we covered a lot.
Yeah, we covered a lot. I feel like I ran out of wisdom. Oh my gosh.
Well, I think we have to both go recharge now. My phone's plugged in. I'm gonna have to plug myself in for a little bit.
Put your phone on airplane mode. Like
I'm gonna go throw it in the pool and hopefully, knowing my life, my phone will like crawl out like the Loch Ness monster after I throw it in the pool. You're not done with me yet. Like it's not. It's never gonna go away.
So we'll get off this podcast, text each other how awesome this was, and then we can turn our phones off.
Yeah, and then I got to text you the person I'm thinking of because you're going to look at it and be like, wow, that is exactly what we described in terms of the Instagram page.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on. That was awesome. I look forward to getting this out there. And, you know, for those listening, I hope you enjoyed it. Any questions when it's posted up on Twitter, Instagram, et cetera, hit us with questions. And I'm sure I'll have you on again at some point. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management brought to you by Challenger Strength. Tune in next week for the newest installment of the show that is changing how we view training, sports performance, and business.